Chapter 45. There was hope in the hearts of the men who sweated and toiled to drive Adeline over the rails. They had all risen up and reached beyond themselves to do the impossible. Men and women who worked the farms and ranches alongside the track stopped their labor and stared in surprise at the speeding lone locomotive that shrieked its whistle in the distance and thundered past beyond their sight in less than a full minute, except for the lingering trail of smoke. With Lofgren in the driver's seat, he pressed Adeline harder and harder until they swept over the border from Utah to Idaho at a speed of nearly 100 miles an hour. Pocatello, Blackfoot, and Idaho Falls came and went. Station masters could only stand in shock and confusion, not able to comprehend a locomotive and tender that came out of nowhere with no advance warning and plunged past their depots at unheard-of speed. Before they raced out of Ogden, Bell had procured a pile of blankets so the crews could catnap between shifts of driving the locomotive and feeding its boiler. At first, they found it impossible to sleep for short periods because of the clamor of the drivetrain, the hiss of steam, and the clatter of the steel wheels over the rails. But as exhaustion set in, they found it easier and easier to drift off until their turn came at the scoop and throttle again. Except for quick stops for coal and water, Adeline never slowed down. At one stop in Spencer, Idaho, Bell learned that they were only 50 minutes behind Cromwell's train. Knowing they were rapidly closing the distance inspired them to renew their efforts and work even harder. The mystery in Bell's mind was the report given him by the Spencer stationmaster. It seemed that the Southern Pacific main track stopped at Missoula, with only a spur that went another 80 miles to the small port of Woods Bay, Montana, on Flathead Lake. "How do you read it?" Lofgren asked Bell after his place at the throttle was taken by Youngeward. "Cromwell must have found another crew after driving the engineer and fireman from Winnemucca after death," said Bell. Lofgren nodded. "Without telegraph messages coming through and informing us otherwise, I have to believe he dumped them in the middle of nowhere, too, and forced a relay crew to come aboard for the final dash across the border." "Then he'll have to do it by driving over a road in an automobile." Lofgren looked at him. "Why do you say that?" Bell shrugged. "The station master at Spencer told me Southern Pacific's tracks end at Woods Bay on the east shore of Flathead Lake. I assume the only way Cromwell can continue north into Canada is by road." "I disagree. My guess is he's going to take his train onto the car ferry that runs across the lake." Bell stared at Lofgren questioningly. "Car ferry?" Lofgren nodded. "Logs from timber operations in Canada are hauled on flat cars across the border to a small port on the west side of the lake called Rollins. From there, they are rolled onto a ferry that carries them across the lake. When they reach Woods Bay, they are coupled to trains that transport them to lumber yards around the southwest." "Why doesn't Southern Pacific simply run their tracks north to Canada?" "The Great Northern Railroad received land rights from the government to cross the upper United States. They laid tracks that run from a landing on the west shore of Flathead Lake north to the border, where their locomotives are coupled to flat cars carrying logs hauled by the Canadian Pacific Railroad from the logging camps. Officials from both Great Northern and Southern Pacific refused to work together and never laid tracks that merged around the ends of the lake." "How do you know all this?" "My uncle lives in Kalispell, above the lake. He's retired now, but he was an engineer for the Great Northern Railroad. He drove an engine between Spokane and Helena." The interest in Bell's voice gave way to trepidation. "So what you're telling me is that Cromwell can ferry his train across the lake to the Northern Pacific tracks and go north into Canada without stepping off his freight car?" "That's about the size of it. If he gets across on the car ferry before we can stop him..." His voice trailed off. Lofgren saw the apprehension in Bell's eyes. "Don't worry, Isaac," he said confidently. Cromwell can't be more than 10 miles up the track ahead of us. We'll catch him. For a long moment, Bell said nothing. Then he slowly reached in a breast pocket and pulled out a piece of paper. Slowly, he unfolded it and handed it to Lofgren. The engineer studied and then spoke without looking up. It looks like a list of names.
It is.
Names of who? Bell dropped his voice until it was barely audible above the clangor of the charging locomotive. The men, women, and children Cromwell murdered. I've been carrying it since I was put in charge of chasing him down. Lofgren's eyes lifted and gazed through the front window of the track ahead.
The others should see this.
Bell nodded.
I think now is an appropriate time.
3 hours later, with Lofgren back on the throttle, Adeline began to slow as she came into Missoula. He brought the locomotive to a halt 50 feet before a switch stand. Shea jumped from the cab, ran up the track, and switched the rails to those of the spur leading to Flathead Lake. He ignored the switchman who came running out of a shack.
"Here, what are you doing?"
demanded the switchman, who was bundled up against a cold wind.
"No time to explain," said Shea as he waved to Lofgren, signaling that it was safe to roll onto the spur from the main track.
He looked at the switchman as Adeline slowly rolled past and said,
"Did another train pass onto the spur in the last hour?"
The switchman nodded.
"They switched onto the spur without permission either."
"How long ago?" Shea demanded.
"About 20 minutes.
Without replying, Shea ran after Adeline and pulled himself up into the cabin.
"According to the switchman," he reported, "Cromwell's train passed onto the spur 20 minutes ago."
80 miles to make up 20 minutes, Youngguard said thoughtfully. It will be a near thing.
He pulled open the throttle to the last notch, and 5 minutes after leaving the junction, he had Adeline pounding over the rails at 85 miles an hour. Flathead Lake came into view as they ran up the eastern shore. The largest freshwater lake in the western United States, it was 28 miles long, 16 miles wide, and covered 188 square miles, with an average depth of 164 feet. They were in the home stretch now of a long and grueling chase. Lofgren sat in the fireman's seat and helped Youngguard survey the track ahead. Bell, Shea, and Long formed a scoop brigade to feed the firebox. Not having leather gloves like the fireman, Bell wrapped his hands with rags the engineers used to wipe oil. The protection helped, but blisters were beginning to rise on his palms from the long hours of shoveling coal. They soon reached a speed higher than the spur tracks were ever built to endure from a speeding train. There was no slowdown over bridges and trestles. Curves were taken on the outer edge. One double reverse turn they whipped around in a violent arc rattled the bolts in the tender. Luckily, the tracks then became as straight as the crow flew. Youngguard held the 85-mile-an-hour pace for the next 40 miles.
"Eureka!"
Lofgren suddenly yelled, vigorously pointing ahead. Everyone leaned from the cab, the icy wind bringing tears to their eyes. But there it was. 4, maybe 5 miles directly ahead, a faint puff of smoke.